gentlemen, step right up. Let's go see the elephant. We're on a roll.
To the show, ladies and gentlemen. That's right. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show as we come to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart. Along with me in the studio today is Mike McBath, of course, the chairman of the board of the former NFL Players Union, National Union. Jeff Sinis, once again, is on the bridge tonight. Nicholas Cicero will be back next week, and Jeff, of course, can work those phones just as good as Nick, so give us a call at 407-774-8255 if the spirit so moves you. All right, we got a lot to talk about tonight. We got a guest lined up for the second hour of the show, an economist, Steve Moore, and we're going to talk about the Obama budget and some other things, some interesting factoids, if you will, out of Chicago and Illinois.
Chris, when he says the Obama budget, I mean, we all know it's a complete disaster if this thing were absolutely followed and approved and everybody was, you know, teary-eyed about this. I mean, this guy is nuts. I mean, look at the waste that's incorporated into this.
Well, you would think, too, that with the Republicans in control of Congress, that it wouldn't have, you know, a snowball's chance and you know where of passing. But,
right. Gosh,
with these guys up there, you just never know. But
I just think the audacity of him to even put this forth when we know that this debt is a major issue. And it hasn't been a big enough issue in this campaign. You notice how very few of them talk about it because many of them are responsible for it, right?
There's only one person.
Except Trumpster.
I was going to say, there's only one person who keeps bringing up the $19 trillion debt over and over and over again, and that's the guy you just mentioned. And by the way, Moore has written an article called "The Budget's Barack Obama's Budget to Nowhere."
Yeah.
Let's hope it's his budget also going nowhere.
We're Trumpligans.
That's in the second hour of the show,
So, I'm a Trumpligan to the end because I'm so fed up. Every time you hear the average American on TV, it's the same old story. You know, no one's listening except Don Trump. So,
that's certainly where he's positioned himself. Of course, tonight the Nevada caucus is going on, and it won't get over, I think, until 10 or 11 o'clock tonight.
Did you hear him on one of his talks today? He's going like this. They said, well, what is caucus? He said, I don't even know what the caucus is. He said, just vote. That's all I can ask you to do. He said, I don't even know how to describe it. He said, it looks to me it's a way to discourage vote. He says, please run out there and vote for me. That was great.
I wonder if that guy's listening to our show. Because
he could be.
Sunday night, mm-hmm. I touched on this a little bit last night. Sunday night, I commented about the caucus process in Nevada in regard to Bernie and Hillary, and it is absolutely designed to discourage people from participating.
Mm-hmm.
It makes it as difficult and as confusing as possible for you.
Because it feeds into the politicians. You know that this is done purposely to disrupt the normal process.
Exactly, so that the higher-ups in the party can have more control over the process because they keep the average person discouraged from actually participating. That's why the numbers are much lower than if they just actually had a primary
vote. Just a simple vote.
Exactly. And, oh, by the way, not only can Donald Trump not describe the process, but they had a lady on, MSNBC had gotten a couple of their people in one of the caucus rooms Saturday, and I watched a little bit of it, and it was as strange as can be, because at a certain point they said, okay, everybody go take your side of the room, and all the Bernie people had to go to one side and the Hillary people had to go to the other side, and you're literally bumping into people as
it's
you go
like you're
about.
In junior high,
and then as people come in who aren't committed, they're suddenly inundated by representatives from both sides, and they're
They're all in your face, trying to convince you to come this way or that way. And it's just totally ridiculous. And, of course, anybody that doesn't, you know, want to, you know, obviously it's meant to discourage. And then they had a lady on who was the caucus chair at this particular place. And the guy started asking her a couple of questions about the process, and she finally just kind of laughed and said, oh, I could stand here and try to describe all the rules and the process to you, but you would end up cross-eyed. So it's no point in even trying.
Isn't that ridiculous?
It is ridiculous.
To continue this when everybody knows the thing's a complete farce.
Well, you know, it's up to each state to decide how they want to do this. But if they ever try to decide to do caucuses here in the state of Florida, there needs to be a grassroots uprising saying, hell no, we don't want that cockamamie you-know-what here in this state.
Did you see Harry Reid the other day in Nevada when the Democrats were doing
it? Yes.
But what concerned me, Chris, actually saw him, he was walking around hey, Harry, what about that major lawsuit you got going against the athletic company because you got hurt? It seemed to me you were drinking and having an awful good time with your eye that was supposedly so damaged that it was affecting your whole lifestyle, phony bag.
A real quick correction here. Harry Reid himself does not drink. He is a teetotaler.
Oh, he doesn't? Oh, yeah.
No, he is a teetotaler. He hates going
to... Then he's a drug addict because no one can think in that mind trend with being a normal human being.
Well, but now his brother does drink and quite heavily. And
so you think his brother popped him?
Yeah.
Good.
A number of times.
Yeah.
But that aside, of course, he's trying to take that company. But now you mentioned Harry Reid.
Right.
Saturday, he played a role in the caucus process by calling in some favors from
the
hotels.
From the unions,
exactly, to get the union people down there, who, of course, when you're in a union, you are encouraged to participate in that sort of thing. You see, these are the ones, this is once again why they have more control over the outcome, because they know who they can get to the caucus and who they can rely on in the caucus, right?
And plus, so they have representatives walking around who certainly know the people who run it, and it could not be healthy for your future job if you don't appear at the caucus.
So
that's why when you see a scumbag like Harry Reid, I mean, it made me sick. Here's a guy filing this major lawsuit against this company, and he's in there walking around talking to everybody. Shay, Harry, you really look hurt to me, buddy. I'd give you about a nickel.
Well, we'll see where his lawsuit goes. In the meantime, we'll get back to the campaign trail here in a little bit. But, of course, the latest in the Gitmo show was played out today at the White House, the president's latest plan. Actually, I didn't see it. Was it at the White House that he gave the speech?
It looked to me like the White House. I didn't even look. It just looked like the White House, and Mr. Bozo was out there. You know?
Yeah.
And you know what? He's so boring because we've heard the same. We've seen the same facial expressions, the same stories.
Yeah.
We know they're all lies. The same story that all the we're affecting other people, governments, and their relationship with us by keeping it open. Hey, buddy, no one cares. They probably appreciate us keeping 91 of the worst criminals in the world locked up, don't you think?
You might think so. And he paraded out his latest plan, which, as Mike said, is pretty much same old, same old. They've been scouting out some sites here in the United States where they would actually build a new facility to house about 60 of these guys that evidently no one else is going to take, and or the military is not willing to release these guys. But the total now is down to about 90, 91, I believe it is. And so there will be another round or two of releases to get them down to that 60. And then, of course, the problem for Obama is that it will require approval from Congress in order for this plan to go ahead. And in particular, since they're going to have to build a facility for this to happen. So that evidently is not going to happen. I'm pretty sure we can count on
about
even this
spreading
Congress,
them around, you know, four or five different states in different facilities.
At least, if not build a brand new one, yes.
Right.
Or at least temporarily until they finish the brand new one. So they can, because I guarantee you what he's anxious to do, and one reason why he's come out with this today is Remember, they announced where he's going to be going here in about 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
He's going to be going down to visit with the old Castro boys,
right,
down yonder.
Mm-hmm.
So he's going to hang out with Castro but brothers and smoke cigars and do whatever they do down there.
I wonder if you could build a facility, now think about this, in Paris Island, right, for these 60 killers, right? And then just practice bombing practice and stuff right there, you know? Because, I mean, these are people who are so unacceptable, so vicious. And, you know, that, what are we going to do, make sure they're treated properly? Yeah.
Well, okay. I tell you, they could hardly be treated better than they're treated now down there. They got their own soccer field. They got their own cook. They got their prayer rooms. They got nice new Qurans. They got everything.
They got Wall Street Journal.
They got whatever they want down there, basically. And the facility, of course, is now modern and state-of-the-art. And, of course, they got their own medical care, better medical care than we get up here.
You know what else scares you? They're going to have new rules and regulations associated with them for lawsuits, et cetera, when they move into this country, though.
Oh.
You watch and see. There'll be new protections.
No doubt about that.
Yep, more money.
Because they'll, actually be officially on American soil here.
Yep.
But once again, the Congress stands in the way. We shall see. Maybe during the middle of the night, if they aren't whisked away to somewhere when Congress ain't looking, who knows with this guy. While this was all going on and playing out in Washington today, there was an arrest in Spain. Did you happen to hear about this?
Was this another fellow that came from Gitmo?
It apparently was.
What a surprise, Chris. I just can't believe that one of those guys would go back to where they came from.
There were four terrorists plotting a terrorist attack in Spain, four individuals plotting a terrorist attack in Spain, and were arrested today. And early reports are one of them was a detainee who had been released from Gitmo.
What
supposedly
a surprise.
To the security of another country, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, there you go.
What, Yemen?
Yeah, and that's just, and if this is true, we'll have to see if this report is borne out. But if it's true, it's just another in the long line. This hasn't happened before.
You're not kidding.
Exactly. So even if it didn't happen today, and I've heard several reports, so evidently it did, or at least the people are right now thinking that it has happened. It has happened before nonetheless, and will happen again. You can bet your bottom dollar on that. Another thing you can bet your bottom dollar on is that we'll be right back after this short break with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. China girl.
Oh,
is the microphone on?
That's a little bit hard of a song to sing to, you know?
China girl. That's our old buddy David Bowie. But, we got, of course, the dancing queen for Barack Obama. Little China girl, I guess, fits too. We're going to get to that story here in just a minute. But we got JJ on the line. She wants to talk about Gitmo. And then Mike has some comments about Gitmo he wants to make as well. JJ, thanks for calling. We appreciate you being out there.
I just our despicable president again acting like everyone's clamoring for them to close Gitmo. I wish some pundits or Republicans would say, well, you know, one of them might escape and then go blow up a Hollywood studio or something like that. And then all the liberals would be like, oh, no, don't have them here. You know,
well, that's a good point.
Make them think of the law of unintended consequences, maybe. Point some of those things out that could happen. Nobody meant for it to. I mean, it's just so disgusting. You know, he says, that's not who we are. That's not our values. Since when? It's always who we've been to lock up the bad guys. I mean, he's so virtuous. That's not our values.
Yeah. That's a standard line, JJ. He uses that every time he's caught in some bad
circumstance. Exactly.
It's That's disgusting.
Well, yeah. See, what he's trying to do, too, is he is implying the undertone here is that we're doing something wrong down there. In other
exactly.
words, going beyond just locking them up. It brings up the connotations again of waterboarding and torture, and this is what we did at Gitmo, so we must close Gitmo. It's like the Abu Ghraib thing, right, over there in Iraq. We got to get out of Abu Ghraib. We got to close that place down because the stink from the atrocities is so bad it'll never be the same again.
But the cutting heads off is not an atrocity.
Yeah, exactly. And by the way, Gitmo obviously is not a recruiting tool, and nobody really cares about Gitmo, and people forget about it until this buffoon brings it up again.
But when in the world have we been in a situation in this? I mean, it's like unbelievable. Somebody that's being investigated by the FBI, that people have gone to prison for much less, is still running for president and smiling safely out there. And then he says the nerve to do that. And then this guy saying, oh, this is who we are, even though we keep hearing of people that were released from Gitmo. I mean, like, nobody's connecting the dots. I mean, other than people that, like, listen to the, you know, that are paying attention. There's so many people not paying attention.
Well,
they get away with it.
You're right about that, and that's what we try to remedy right here. So, but you're right. I can't disagree with you on anything you said.
I know a lot of your listeners probably know this, but just for the ones that don't, from noon to 12:30, Jay Sekulow is on the sister station. And he updates, and he's always got a petition going for, and right now it's for not closing Gitmo.
Yeah, we have an answer for this. You'll hear in about 1 minute.
Yeah, we got our own little answer for it. But
oh, you do?
Okay, yeah, we're going to get to that.
I was going to give you the phone number.
Okay, for Jay?
Yeah, go ahead.
For Jay, yeah, not to close, and like the other day it was not to let the Republicans take a vote on Supreme Court. You know, they do
right.
a lot of good things.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're trying to do with our polls around here. But he's gone farther with and doing petitions, you said?
Yeah, and they'll ask you for money, of course.
Oh,
you don't
okay.
know. I mean, I can't give every time I sign. I say, you know, hey, I still want to sign and get my name on the petition.
There's an idea.
Anyway,
all right, well, what's Jay's phone number real quick?
The number 1-877-989-2255.
All right. 877. Yeah, 877-989-2255.
Yeah.
All right. We got it.
Okay.
All right.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate
All right.
it.
Appreciate you being out there. And we do. We've got our own little remedy, if you will, for the Gitmo situation,
it's
right?
It's interesting,
Mike,
that she called in about that. We discussed this earlier, and our contest this week, which, you know, we do on Thursdays, is going to involve, we want the opinion of our listening audience, what should we do with Gitmo? Now, I'm going to give you a lead in what I think we should do. Now, Gitmo, first of all, I think we should split the place in half, take half of it and let Don Trump develop it into a resort, you know, and make a profit off of it and show the Cubans, you know, how capitalism works. That's with half of it. The other half, I want to save money. I want to consolidate it. So I want to do away with all the jail cells because, remember, there's 91 people staying there. And what we're going to do, we're going to put all 91 of our Muslim, they are Muslims, right?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Terrorists, oh, they are terrorists, right? And they are killers, right? We're going to put all 91 of them into one cell because we could save a lot of money by doing that.
A dormitory.
Right. And then I'd make a real small little cell, and then right next to him, we're going to have another cell, and we're going to put Hillary Clinton into it. And what we're going to do, because I think we can get a lot done with very little money. We got Trump producing money on one side. We got the killer Muslims on the other side. We have a thief right next door to him in the name of Hillary Clinton. What we can do is once every other day, we waterboard Hillary, one day. Then we put her into the cell with the 91 loving and peaceful Muslims.
Oh, wait, now, wait a minute.
And she can discuss how liberalism can help them. And then we'll see how she returns to her cell, because that will be truly an example of what I would love to see displayed.
I doubt,
so,
I don't know who that would be worse for, her or the terrorists.
I know, that is a point. Somebody brought that up to me, and I said, well, maybe I better cancel that. But in simple terms, what we're looking
cruel
for...
Cruel and unusual punishment.
Right, we're looking for our audience to come up with, what should we do with Gitmo? So mine, in very simple terms, half developed by Don Trump to show how capitalism works in Cuba. The other half we consolidate. We have two cells. We throw the 91 punks into the one cell. We take Hillary, put her, because that's where she's going anyway, put her in the other cell, and we'll waterboard her each day, find out what actually happened with our national security and actually what happened, you know, with our foundation money. And then on the day that she is off from waterboarding, we'll send her in to meet all these wonderful kind, loving gentlemen.
So that she can show them some understanding.
Some true love.
Okay. All right. So that's the idea, folks. What would you do with Gitmo? All right. So that'll be Thursday. That'll be our contest for Thursday. Speaking of contests.
But, you know, JJ was, she just about had her answer in her conversation with us.
She just about.
So she's going to have a good entry point. Yeah.
Yeah. We did a pick six contest on Friday for the for this past weekend's South Carolina primary. And we did not have anyone who got all six right.
Whoa.
But we did have one who got four correct, and that was Ed. And Ed simply switched around Cruz and Rubio. He had Cruz coming in second, Rubio coming in third. He had all the rest of them in the order they came in. So Ed, because he got four out of six right, is the winner of our pick six contest. We had a couple that got three right and a bunch that got two. Amazingly, though, only one person got four right. So we were kind of all over the place.
Very
on
impressed.
That one. Yeah,
very much
but
impressed.
Yeah, good for him.
Mm-hmm.
And so we'll be getting a hold of Ed tonight or in the morning and get his prize out to him. So congratulations, Ed! If you are listening, you have won the Pick Six contest. The caucus is going on tonight, and of course, we'll bring you the results tomorrow. If the polls are any indication, Trump's running away with it. Oh, would somebody put that Hillary back in the closet or somewhere?
Chris, do you think
put her back in her crate.
Do you think she'll appear at Westminster next year? She could open the show up. Could you imagine that? Start barking and everything? Everybody would go bonkers.
Oh, yeah, well.
Yeah, they would go bonkers, I guarantee. I'm not sure which way. But
I wouldn't want to be the one to have to give her, you know, how those judges give the dogs.
The blue ribbons. And
well, no, the inspections.
Oh,
Where they, like, grab them and they do different things.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't want to be the one to do that, that's for sure.
It's like, gentlemen, start your engine. She could, like, start to bark, you know, bark, 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 you know, something like that.
Barf, 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 barf.
Yeah, or barf, 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 barf.
All right. By the way, their South Carolina primary is coming up this weekend, and she's running away with it. And as I said, Bernie is just not going to play in the South.
No.
His appeal is to the Northeast and the far West, somewhat amongst the Hispanics, but he is just not attracting enough of the black vote. A little bit, but not enough to really show any kind of impact here in the South.
You know, so, Chris, when you watch the Democrats, and don't you think this is true, particularly Hillary, all she talks about is the black vote, the white vote, the Hispanic vote, the poor vote, where the Republicans just talk about the vote.
Well,
did you ever see a group that segments so much that plays the race card in every aspect as the Democratic Party?
Well, that identity politics is how they make their living. You know, they go to each group and they have an emotional emotional appeal for each group. They get that group locked in, and then it's hard to break that lock. And so
but it really is funny when you do it. Listen, always when they speak, they always go the same thing. The black vote, the white bloke, the Hispanic bloke, the poor bloke, the bit, and then they try to fool each category, and then they lead them right to poverty for about 4 to 5 decades, and then they become Republicans.
Yep.
You know, so that's
it's
happens.
That repetition. It's like you say a
constant repetition, constant bad story, takes a while for the people to feel it, and we'll go through probably later today the Chicago story, which is so disgusting.
Yeah, I want to get to that, but I want to back up because while Obama is concentrating on Gitmo, we got real problems developing in the South China Sea because China is putting missiles, anti-aircraft and evidently anti-ship missiles on some of these small
islands in the South China Sea. And the problem is, you know, they announced they're putting radar in there on four islands. And the other thing is they're trying to make it very clear to the United States that this is our territory. And guess what? You keep pushing and we're going to pull. We're going to do something. And the reality of it is this could spark a great embarrassment to the U.S. because they know that the guy that they have in office will bend. And China's economy is rather fragile, and I believe that China right now is still on the high side economically but fading to the low side. And, you know, many of their generals are older individuals. They now have excellent technology, which they stole from us.
Well, actually, we gave it to them.
Or whatever. Yet their planes are extremely effective. They have nuclear weapons. And this is a rough, rough group, and I'm going to tell you, this thing is going to get awful ugly because trillions of dollars of commerce moves through and past those islands, and Obama thinks he's just going to challenge them with one ship. Wait till they blow the ship out of the water. What are we going to do? Well, we're going to sue you?
Well, I think probably the reason why we sailed a ship through there recently is to avoid the embarrassment of not being able to sail it through there now.
Right? Oh, don't even say that. Wait till another month or two and see what appears.
That's right. All right. Let's go to the phone lines. We got Jerry on the line. Jerry, thank you for calling tonight. Appreciate you being out there.
Hey, guys. Just wanted to drop you a line and share a funny story about the primary up in South Carolina there.
Oh, we love that. Go ahead.
Okay, go ahead. Were you there?
Well, yeah, we were up there over the weekend up in Charleston walking around checking out the sites. And I spotted two Bernie Sanders volunteers. Of course, they were a little wet behind the ears. They were very young.
Okay, yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I was going to say.
They'd have to be.
Yeah.
Yeah, they were college students, you know, and they're walking through down by the Battery in Charleston. I don't know if you've ever been there, but those homes down there, they look like hotels.
Right, and that's near the end toward the water, right?
Right.
Yeah, it's real nice.
Those houses are, you know, probably five million plus range, you know, they're,
that's where the Clintons live.
Yeah. But they're going down there. They're going door to door at these houses.
Oh, is that funny?
And I wanted to go up and say something to them. Of course, my wife didn't want me to, but I did anyway. So I went up and asked them. I said, so how's it going to go when you knock on that door and they open the door and you tell them that you want to take away all their stuff and give it to other people?
That's about the size of it, right?
You know what? That's a great indoctrination, though, for those kids to learn the real world. I'd have probably let them go on, and after they got thrown out of the fifth house, they say, you guys see the disconnect anywhere?
Oh, my God.
Right.
And, that's great.
They kind of chuckled. I said, well, you realize that just about everybody that lives down here is going to be in that 95% tax bracket. I just hope you do well down here. I don't think you're in the right zip code.
No, I don't think so. And by the way, evidently there's a video going kind of viral, I guess, of a Bernie Sanders supporter who worked a phone bank. And she's all in tears because all these Trump people were so mean to her and everything.
What a surprise, right, Chris? Oh, my God, is that funny.
Wow.
Welcome to the real world, people, right?
Cold calling's a little difficult.
Dude. Oh, my Lord.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. I did commend them on their stick-to-itiveness.
I suppose we can give them that anyway, right?
Yeah.
Did you get a Bernie Sanders sticker from them for your car or anything, Jerry?
I did not. I was unable to get that.
They make good target practice targets. So
yeah, exactly.
All right. God bless you, Jerry. Thanks for being out there.
That's great.
Thanks, man.
That's a good story. And can you imagine these kids going to these $5 million houses?
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Yeah. By the way, that's Jerry Shepherd from Jerry and Jerry's Mercedes.
And you know, it's that old story. Understand your market. Well, you guys, this is not your market. Wrong end of town.
You got that right. You got that right. Okay, we got Dave on the line next. Dave, thank you for calling tonight.
Just quick question. question with both for both y'all. Did you listen to Dr. Bennett's interview with Steve Wynn? Now, it may have been recorded and rebroadcast, but it was the first time I ran across it this morning. Very interesting.
Steve Wynn, the casino,
casino magnate.
I caught the very tail end of it, so I did not really get any of it. No,
I'm just wondering, does Mr. Wynn, and of course all of his employees, I'm sure he has sway over them directly, but I'm thinking, does he, when, like the old E.F. Hutton commercial, when he speaks, do people listen, the rank and file? Because otherwise there would not be a Democrat in Nevada for the next century. Because it makes no sense.
I know, they live off of money.
Well, you got to understand that most of his employees are union employees.
Right, but again, to vote Democrat against the self-interest of the free economy, and obviously what Mr. Wynn is trying to instill in them,
Well, your question reminds me of David Siegel right here in Orlando.
Well, that's true. That's
He wrote those letters to his employees. Remember that? I don't know that it has that much of an effect, because you have to understand, a lot of the people who are down there cleaning the rooms and vacuuming the carpets and stuff probably don't hold Mr. Wynn in a high regard. They probably are envious of him, jealous of him, or think they could never be like him, and hold a grudge against him. I think a lot of things come into play in that effect. So I don't think that he does have the E.F. Hutton effect, so to speak.
Yeah, plus the fact that these poor people don't have any economic understanding at all. And where you would understand, and we'd see these people come in, they live off of prosperity. That helps them all have jobs, but I just don't think they understand the connection, and that's what they take advantage of, meaning the Bernie Sanders. I mean, the put a guy out there, I mean, look at this guy, 75 years old?
74.
And he preaches a fantasy. I mean, the guy should be down in Guantanamo.
And he's never had a real job in his life.
Right.
Right?
He's a politician.
I don't think he's
a do-nothing job.
I don't think he ever even had a job at all until he became mayor. Right. So. But anyway, to answer your question, now, if it were a union boss calling in favors, I think the E.F. Hutton effect would be in play. But from the other angle, I don't think as much. All right.
Okay, I was just curious.
All right. Thank you, Dave. All right. Appreciate your question out there. All right.
I still like Jerry's. When he compared those kids walking into the houses, that would have been funny. Like, hey, kid, what are you doing here? How do you think I got this house?
Don't you think your time would be a little better spent in a different neighborhood, right? All right. But to your point, and to Bernie Sanders, there are so many, and especially young people out there, who have no understanding of basic economics, what they used to call macroeconomics.
Right. And usually you had to take that, even in liberal arts, you had to take one micro and one macro course.
Exactly. And so that you have just at least a little bit of understanding of supply and demand and the things that, the differences between capitalism and socialism. Yeah, I don't think people who say they believe in socialism even know what it means. I don't think they have any idea whatsoever. As a matter of fact, I know for a fact they don't, because I studied Marxism and socialism. They have no concept whatsoever what they are talking about. But we do. At least we think we do.
That's why we're here.
And we'll be right back after this short break. All right, welcome back to the show. If you're out there on the road again, folks, just please take it easy and keep us tuned in, and we'll help get you there. And of course, Mick Dolan bring you all those great traffic updates. All right, right before the break, we started to go down the road of socialism a little bit, and I just want to throw out a couple of little things about socialism, because there are a lot of misperceptions about socialism, and even amongst the so-called learned people out there. Socialism, simply put, socialism is but a stage of economic development between capitalism and communism. Now, in Europe and in most of the learned institutions of the United States, socialism is seen as an alternative to communism. In other words, the old Soviet Union was perceived to be a communist state. And because Europe didn't want to be communist, but because you had a lot of communists who were in political movements in Europe, there was a quote-unquote compromise, and the compromise was what they call, and what Bernie Sanders calls, democratic socialism. It is seen as an alternative to communism, when in fact, communist Marxist theory teaches us that socialism is but the last step before you get to communism. Socialism is characterized by the means of production, in other words, the private sector economy, being owned by the state. And the political scenario under socialism is what they call a dictatorship of the proletariat. It is what Alex de Tocqueville warned about, and that is that when the sort of underclass majority figures out that they can take control of the political process, they will vote all the policies in that they want and take the wealth away from the other class. And that dictatorship of the proletariat will then result in taking control of all the means of production and the private economy. And once again, this is only to get us yet to communism. It is not an alternative. It is but a step toward communism. And of course, the illusion, the dream, the promise is that things will get better for the human condition along the way. Now, lo and behold, we don't even have to look outside of our own country to see that, in fact, the opposite occurs. As you move more and more towards socialism, things do not get better, they get worse. Case in point.
Well, what we did is we looked at the difference between two states. One is one of our favorite, Illinois, which I'm sure all familiar with. The other one is a Republican, just about 100% Oklahoma. Remember, right now, the state of Illinois virtually has no Republicans elected there. Now, watch this. There are more people on welfare in Illinois than there are people working. Is that disgusting? How many Americans have to be disgusted by that? How many decades has Illinois been controlled by
that, my friend, is what we call the dictatorship of the proletariat.
Right.
Okay?
No.
They are now in control of the political process in Illinois.
And look how they get control. Chicago pays the highest wages to teachers than anywhere else in the United States. Their average pay is $110,000 a year. Obviously, the results are horrendous. Their pensions average, now you'll love this, hardworking Americans, average 80 to 90% of their income. Remember, average income, $110,000. Now, why does that happen? It happens because the politicians that get elected.
And by the way, their schools produce some of the worst.
Their schools are absolutely horrible.
Students in the country.
Another interesting fact, too, which you all got to be excited about. In the last 6 months, 292 people were murdered in Chicago, 221 were killed in Iraq. Wow. Does that sound a little strange to you? And also, Chicago has one of the strictest gun laws in the entire United States. Should we ever listen to this BS put out by the Democratic Party? Now, here's the chain of command in Chicago and Illinois. President Barack Obama, Senator Dick Dirtbag Durbin, House Representative Jesse Jackson, oh, he's a winner, Jr., Governor Pat Quinn, House Leader Mike Madigan, General Attorney General Lisa Madigan, Mayor Rahm Emanuel, the leadership, all Democrats. Now, you have to love this. First of all, I want to thank them for the combat zone in Chicago. And you can't blame Republicans because guess what? There aren't any. Okay? Now, Chicago's school system has been rated one of the worst in the country. Can't blame Republicans, right? There aren't any. The state pension fund, you all love this because you're going to pay for it. The state pension fund, there's $78 billion in debt, the worst in the country. Can't blame the Republicans. There aren't any. Cook County, which is Chicago, their sales tax, and this is exactly how it works, Chris, which you pinpointed it, is 10.25%, highest in the country. Oh, that's right. Can't blame Republicans. There aren't any. And this is a political culture that Obama comes from in Illinois, and he is going to fix Washington politics for us. Yeah, Governor Ryan is no longer governor. He is in prison. He was replaced by Rod Blagojevich, who is, by the way, also in prison. And, oh, that's right, Representative Jesse Jackson Jr. resigned, and that's right, he and his wife are both in prison. Oh, wait a second, the land of Lincoln, where our governors and representatives make our license plates? What? As long as they keep providing entitlements to the population of Chicago, nothing is going to change except the state will go bankrupt before the country does. This is a perfect lesson to America that should be taken to heart. And when you go to vote, if you see a D by the guy's name, assume it means derelict or Democrat. You can't have this continue on.
All right. Okay. We got Brad on the line. Brad, thank you for calling. We appreciate you being out there.
Oh, hey, guys. Good evening. Good
hey,
evening.
Guys.
Thank you for all you just said, by the way, about the horrid socialist state of Illinois and Cook County and all that. That's so revealing. And it should be, I'm going to use all that when I go online and be the warrior that I am, you know, for
good for you.
That's good. Good for you.
My question, though, is, and I want to know if you guys can hone in on this, because this is very serious. It concerns Hillary Clinton. And if there is an eventual debate in November between her and Donald Trump, if you can get this to his campaign, or because this is like a really nobody's asking it. No news organizations would ask it, even if they knew about it, because they're going to protect her. But it concerns what she told the families of the dead SEALs, soldiers, and the ambassador when they came back. And Hillary leaned over and said, don't worry, we are going to get whoever's responsible who made that videotape, you know, the one that made fun of Muhammad.
Right.
Now, if she has the judgment to be president, wouldn't she have said, a proper judgment, healthy thinking, don't worry, we're going to get the terrorists who did this? Instead, now, this is something that a lunatic would say in a loony bin. We don't prosecute people for making fun of Muhammad or making movies. That's their art. That's their free speech. If Trump were to use that in a debate against her, what could she possibly answer? She'd look like a laughingstock on the stage. But what I want to know is why no news media has asked her that question. It's being pushed aside, but is this something very serious? Because, in other words, they're making fun of Trump at every chance because they say he's a fool for saying build a wall. Well, if she said that, and if the families will testify that she told them that they're going to get the man who made the video instead of the terrorists who blew up the embassy, how does she have the judgment to be president of the United States?
All right. Well, she has been asked by at least one reporter about that very thing. And she had a canned response, and her canned response was, in essence, to say that the families got it wrong. She didn't call them liars. But she said that they got it wrong and that she didn't say what they are saying, she said. Now, one of the victims' mothers was then asked about that, and she said, oh, no, we didn't get it wrong. She's lying again. You know, what you have to understand about Hillary Clinton is she is a habitual liar. And so she's very skilled at it, and she'll just lie, you know, while she smiles without blinking. She almost has it down where she can, you know, has total control over her body language, so that it's very difficult to detect. But there's one sure way to detect when she's lying, and that's of course when she's moving her lips, and sound is coming out of her mouth. I hesitate to go wholeheartedly and agree with you here simply because she will just stand there and lie through her teeth. And when you're in a debate like that, of course, you can't bring up on stage the person to refute her, which would actually drive the point home. But if you could get her to reiterate that lie in the debate and then perhaps have that woman appear at some campaign appearances. When I say that woman, I mean the mother of the victim. Yeah. Then you might have an effect on it. But Hillary Clinton, let me just put this out there for all of you. Hillary Clinton is not going to be a pushover in these debates. The questions won't, you know, they'll be catered for her. She's got her let's just say, her style down, and she's not going to be knocked off her game. It'll be very difficult to take her off of her game, and in that sense, she'll be difficult to beat. I know we all want to think that Hillary Clinton will be easy to beat in a debate, but it just doesn't work that way, and especially when you have the moderators on your side. So I wouldn't get my hopes up too high there, Brad, but I appreciate where you're aiming for. And thank you for the call.
Chris, don't you believe, though, that Clinton and I take Trump. Trump is holding back. You know, you're not going to fire all your stuff at her now. You're going to wait, and you're compiling all these facts and figures. And then when it's time for one-on-one, you're going to blast her into oblivion. And he has the guts to do it, where a lot of these politicians, I don't think they would just challenge her straight up. And she needs to be embarrassed on that stage for what she's done to the American people.
Well, I actually think Cruz would do a pretty good job.
Yeah, I think you're right on that.
Rubio, I'm not so sure.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
Yeah. All right, we'll be right back after this short break at the top of the hour. We got a lot more to talk about tonight. And, of course, you can join us at 407-774-8255. You are listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show on FM 105.5 and AM 660. The Answer.
Ladies and gentlemen, sit it right up. Let's go see the elephant. When I'm a road.
Welcome back to the show, folks, where we hope we'll be able to see the truth here this evening through our words, as it were. That's right. You're listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show, coming to you live on FM 105.5 and AM 660, The Answer. I am Christopher Hart, along with the chairman of the board, Mike McBath. We got Jeff Sinis on the bridge. 407-774-8255 is the number. Just a couple of quick things before we get back to the business of the show, as it were. Thursday, don't forget, Thursday night is going to be the next Republican debate live from Houston. Will be carried live on these stations. And the live national coverage will begin at 6 p.m. So we're going to give up the second hour of our show on Thursday to get you guys tuned in to the live national coverage. The debate itself is scheduled to begin at 8:30, but there'll be some pregame stuff going on, if you
now,
will.
Is this the one? Is Megyn Kelly in this one?
This is CNN.
Okay, CNN.
CNN, Salem Media Group. Hugh Hewitt's going to be there. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure if it's going to be Anderson Cooper. For some reason, I'm thinking not Anderson Cooper. But it'll be CNN and Salem Media Group Thursday. And then once again, we'll give over at 6 o'clock to them. And then if you haven't already, please go to your iTunes or Google Play Store, your App Store, and download the free WORL-FM-AM app. That's the free WORL-FM-AM app. And once you do that, you'll be able to do a whole lot of things that you can't just by listening on radio. You'll be able to, of course, listen to us live on that smartphone, but you'll also be able to interact with the station and take participate in polls and contests. There will be some games and giveaways going on. You'll get station news. You'll get programming updates. And the talk back feature is probably going to be a real fun one for you out there, where you can, you know, say a few words. And who knows, it might just wind up on the air. But we'll certainly be listening to all of them. That's WORL-FM-AM at the App Store. And once again, poll questions going up brand new every day. Now, Nick's out of town right now, so I'm not sure. I know he was doing the poll questions. So if there's some delay because of Nick being out of town, don't worry. When he gets back, everything will be up to daily specifications.
Pretty good to Hollywood for his next dating game.
By the way, he said they had a lot of fun with that dating game the other night on his show.
I can't believe he runs marathons.
Nick, yeah. He does that.
He
goofy,
just doesn't look like he's
challenge.
Built for marathons.
I tell you what, that guy can run. He eats it real healthy too.
I know he eats. I can verify that. I don't know if it's healthy, but
no. I see the stuff
he
brings
cook,
in here.
Right? Remember? He said that he can make all different types of pasta and things.
Yeah. Okay. So. All right, and then speaking of contests, we're running our own little contest Thursday, and of course the president was out today replaying his Less Clothes Gitmo show, and once again saying, you know, basically trying to shame us into it, guilt us into it.
That's not going to work.
No, and Congress is already saying forget it, and this is one of the fights I think they will be good for, not doing this, because actually there are a lot of Democrats who don't want these bad guys here in the United States either. So
One reason you're not going to get elected, you vote for that, and your competitor holds that against you. Good luck.
Yeah. And meantime, in Spain today, four terrorists plotting a terrorist act were picked up, and it looks like one of them was a former Gitmo detainee. So you want to talk about timing.
Do you think you get a graduation ring or something with a big G, you know, when you graduate from Gitmo? I mean, knowing Obama, he probably gives them a 2-carat diamond, in the middle of a ring.
No, they ought to do that show. What was that show that had Chuck Connors in it? Where
The Rifleman.
Was... No. This was after The Rifleman, where he was ashamed. He was accused of doing something that he didn't do. I think it was called Branded.
That's right, I remember.
And he got branded on his chest, remember? Yeah, that's what they need to do to these guys, branded.
I think they had to take Paladin and have him hunt those guys down. Remember, he'd hunt them down from San Francisco?
Yeah.
That was one of my favorites. Yep.
Yeah, some good old shows back in the day. But we have got, we want to help the president. Right,
I
mean,
I agree
now
with
the
you,
guy,
Chris.
You know, he's trying hard.
Yeah, he's.
You know, got to feel sorry for the guy, right?
He spent $80 million on vacations. This guy's, he's probably depressed and everything.
And
he didn't spend $200 million.
He only wants to spend about $500 million on building a new facility.
Yeah,
you know,
it's taxpayers' money. No big deal.
To replace Gitmo.
Yeah, it's not your money,
right?
Yeah.
And then of course they'll want to shut that one down too, because it won't be who we are all about, right?
Standard
I mean,
line.
If Gitmo is not who we are all about, then how can a brand new facility to hold these people be what we are all about? But that's part of the plan. So we, you know, in our generosity here and our sympathy for the president, we want to help the man out.
Yeah, I think, Chris, what we want to do is have our callers, listeners, call in and give us an idea of what they would like to see done with Gitmo. Now,
Of course, this would have to include the prisoners, right?
Oh, yeah, the prisoners, too. They're going to be part of this act.
Right.
And, you know, I've come up with what I would like to see, Don. I would like to see the place split in half. Half of it will be taken by Don Trump. He will develop into a luxury resort, show how capitalism works for all the people of Cuba whose houses are falling down, right?
Yeah.
That would be a nice example. The other half, instead of having, let's say, 80 prison cells, I'd like to see that consolidated down to 2. And then I'd like to take the 91 Muslim killer jihadists and put them all in one of the 2 prisons.
Dormitory
now,
style.
Now, who would the other prison be for? That would be for a wonderful woman who happens to be running for president of the United States, Hillary Clinton. We could put her in the other prison, and then every day, other day, we would waterboard her one day until we got the truth. You know, about selling influence while she was Secretary of State, or, you know, for her foundation, or we could get information on the emails that took 2 years.
What was really going on over there in Libya?
Right. We could get all this information out of her, and then on her day off from waterboarding, then we could take her and stick her in with the 91 wonderful Muslims, and she could discuss the love and liberal background of the Democratic Party to them, and we'll see how well they would treat her. So that's my vision of what we could do with Gitmo, but I can't wait to see our listeners, because I know there's going to be some great thoughts come across that maybe we could email to the president.
All right, so this is all new to me tonight as well, folks, so I'll work on my alternative for the Gitmo problem here. So you work on yours, and Thursday we'll run that contest. And, of course, you'll be working for a $20 gift card to Cafe Positano. We got some brand-new bumper stickers in and some other stuff, so it's going to be a whole lot of fun. That will be coming up Friday. Just a few minutes, we're going to have economist Steve Moore join us, And we'll be talking about the budget situation, the debt situation, and things of that nature. But, of course, you can feel free to call in with questions as well. 407-774-8255 is the number. And if you didn't hear it the other night when I was talking about it, and I know it's kind of late to tell you this, but if you can make it over to the Eastmont Civic Center tonight, you'll be let's just say you'll be enlightened by Julio Lara. Julio Lara was Che Guevara's hitman during the Castro Revolution. That's right. The
guy, how old is he, 200?
Yeah, he's a pretty old guy.
Yeah, he'll be pretty old.
He's authored a number of books. His latest book is How to Save America. And he will be giving a lecture there tonight called The Journey of Julio Lara, how he got from being a hitman to what he is today, an evangelizing Christian who goes around trying to represent Christians and Jews and speak to those groups around the country. So that would be
going on. Did he suffer any consequences for being a hitman?
I will have to go find out tonight.
Maybe we'll have to ask God.
That's the ultimate. Eastmont Civic Center. That's the doors open here in a few minutes at 6:30. The presentation begins at 7 o'clock. It is free, and you are invited. Okay? So if you will take advantage of that, just when you get over there, tell them you heard about it on the show. All right, I see we have our guest standing by, so let's go ahead and take our commercial break, get it out of the way, and then when we come back, we are going to have economist Steve Moore, the FreedomWorks senior economics contributor, and we'll be talking about Barack Obama's budget to nowhere. All right, welcome back to the show, folks. That's our little ode to Barack Obama there. You know, Jordan gets the warrior king. We get stuck with the dancing queen. So
life goes on.
All right, 407-774-8255 is the number. We took a quick break there because we wanted to get right to our guest today. This man you've probably seen on Fox. If not, you might have seen him before on CNBC, but he's an excellent economist. And he speaks in terms that we can all understand, and I certainly appreciate that. So I want to welcome the senior economic contributor for FreedomWorks to the show, Steve Moore. Stephen Moore, thanks for being with us tonight. We appreciate it.
Hi, mate. It's my pleasure to be with you.
All right. Well, thanks so much. First of all, you've written your latest article entitled Barack Obama's Budget to Nowhere. Is it even going anywhere?
Well, that's the good news. This was a budget for show. It was a liberal wish list of what, you know, liberals will do if they, you know, continue to hold the White House after this election. And so Obama proposed trillions of dollars in new spending and trillions of dollars in new taxes and trillions of dollars of new debt. By the way, one of the big things that he proposes is did you see this one, the $10 a gallon, I mean, $10 a
barrel.
Right. Oil tax,
yeah,
which would be, you know, I figure about 20 to 22 cents a gallon increase in the price you pay at the gas pump. You know, every time the middle class and the working class get a break,
yeah, they take it away from you.
Politicians want to take it away through taxes. Isn't it amazing?
Yeah, indeed it is. That's always their go-to thing. But, you know, especially now, that would be, of course, he wants to do it because the price of a barrel is so cheap right now. But if you tacked on $10, that's 30% to a barrel of oil.
Yep. Well, that's right. We're at $30 now, so it'd be a one-third increase in the price of oil you pay, and that's all he's going to be pushed on to the consumer. So we're going to pay for this at the gas pump. One of the things I find really troubling about Obama's policies, and I would say that this also applies to Hillary and Bernie Sanders, is that they have this obsession, this weird fascination with this green energy stuff that hasn't worked out very well. And so that what they want to do is take billions and billions of dollars in taxes from the oil industry and give it to their billionaire friends who are invested in the green energy market. And this comes at a weird time because here we have the cheapest oil that we've had in at least a decade, maybe more. I was out in Colorado last week and paid $1.39 a gallon for gasoline. I hadn't done that in at least a decade.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, the why wouldn't we just use the energy resources we have? We have so many hundreds of years now worth of oil and natural gas, and natural gas is a very clean burning fuel. We have more coal than any other country in the world. We can be the Saudi Arabia of this century if we get this right. I don't know, but, you know, Obama's thinking somehow we're going to power our $18 trillion economy with windmills. It's the dumbest thing I've ever heard.
It is, except when you consider that they have bought into this global warming nonsense and the presumption that fossil fuels is responsible for it, which, if you really look at the scientific evidence, it is not. I mean, it's bogus.
Right. And look, even if it were, this isn't. None of these actions are going to do anything to stop the climate change, if it's happening, because well, we're shutting down our coal plants and our fossil fuel industry. What do you think China and India are doing there? They're building 500 new coal plants. So we're going to shut down our energy, and they're going to go way ahead of us. I mean, this is going to cost Americans jobs. It's going to make us poor. I mean, obviously, if energy becomes more expensive, then it's less accessible to people, and it puts a real hardship on low-income people. So it's something we as conservatives really need to fight back against and say, you know, this green energy stuff is a cute experiment, but if we want to be serious about providing enough electricity for people, now look, you're in Orlando where you get a lot of sunshine, so maybe, you know, it's sometimes, you know, solar power might make some sense, but you
not.
Know, I grew up in Chicago. I guarantee you, you're not going to get a lot of electricity power in Chicago. And yeah, I mean, because the federal government is subsidizing people are putting solar paneling on their roofs in Chicago when it's barely ever sunny.
It's ridiculous, and it's not even reliable down here. I mean, it can work some days, but some days not.
Yeah.
One of the things
what that means, sorry to interrupt, but what that means is you can't rely on solar energy. That means you're going to have coal or, you know, natural gas or some other power plant to back up the solar, or else you're going to have brownouts.
Which is what they do in California. They have to go out of state to get their power because they can't rely on their green energy. And one of the things that I thought was interesting, too, that with this this barrel, $10 barrel oil tax, is they wanted to promote self-driving cars. Now, what in the world does a self-driving car have to do with green energy even, right?
Well, you know, these Google cars that are coming, those are going to be amazing. And, you know, I've actually spent a lot of time with people developing these. They will actually reduce gas consumption because you're going to have a lot less congestion on the roads because most congestion is due to accidents, and most accidents are due to human error, not the machine error. And so that's going to be a good thing. But that leads to another question. If we're going to, I think in 10 or 15 years, we're all going to be driving around in these Google cars that'll take you anywhere you want to. They'll have instant maps that tell you the, you know, quickest way to get from route A to route B. Well, if we're going to do that, why are we spending tens and tens of billions of dollars on mass transit? Everybody's going to have their own car.
Yeah, Steve, you know, on this green energy issue again, you know, you wonder, obviously, this is a great rallying point for fundraisers, right? You know that?
Yep.
I know that.
Yep.
We also wonder about.
It's not just a fundraising tool, but it is that. It is a giveaway. It's a giveaway to these big, rich Democratic donors who've invested up to their eyebrows in this stuff like solar and wind power. And now that we've got $30 a barrel of gas, not $300 a barrel of gas, they're screwed, right? They can't make money. The only way they can possibly stay in business is to run to Uncle Sam and say, gimme, 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 gimme. And that's what Obama's doing now. It's a total cronyism thing. It's corporate welfare in its worst.
I mean, what's really bad about it, they funnel the money through to corporations, through grants and other types of loans, and then they disappear. All these fellows got all this massive money. They contributed it back to the Democratic Party.
Of course.
This is absolutely, you know, what a fraud.
It's a racket.
Yeah, it's a racket. And I was going to make a big mistake. I was going to say, I can't believe the media doesn't stop smashing these people for this. But they don't. They let it continue on, and, you know.
Well, because it's the liberal media, and they think this is just wonderful. And by the way, if you really wanted to slow down growth and progress, which I think a lot of Democrats want to do, they actually are against economic advance. What better way to do that than to, you know, to deny the country safe and affordable and cheap energy? You know, if we had to rely truly on wind power and solar power, we would have, as you know, we would have around, and not just brownouts, we'd have blackouts where people wouldn't actually have access to electricity unless they had their own source of electricity generation. You know, there's a reason we use coal, we use natural gas, and we use nuclear power and so on, because those are very efficient ways to get electricity. There's a reason 500 years ago people stopped using windmills. They're not a very good way to get electricity. You can do it, but it's incredibly inefficient.
Yeah, indeed. Indeed it is. By the way, folks, we're speaking with Stephen Moore, the senior economic contributor at FreedomWorks. And Stephen, of course, is a constant presence on Fox and other shows. And Stephen, you're article Budget to Nowhere, of course, you list a lot of these things. It's sort of, as you say, it's a Christmas wish list, if you will, for liberals. But actually, when you compare it to, say, Bernie Sanders, it's pretty moderate in those terms, isn't it?
Like Bernie wants, you know, totally socialized health care, although Obama has gotten us a long way there. I don't see a big difference between Bernie Sanders and, you know, Barack Obama. I don't see a big difference between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton. I think the only difference between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton is that Bernie Sanders calls himself a socialist and Hillary doesn't. You know, she pretends she's not, but she's favorable of all the things. I mean, she wants to take the country as far to the left as she can. I mean, I'm a guess. Did you see that poll? You guys see that poll that came out today that a majority of Democrats think that socialism is superior to capitalism?
Yes. Steve, here's a question on that, though. Don't you think the majority of Democrats, and a lot of them are these young kids that are very naive, they don't have any clue what socialism is. So, you know, I think it's horrible to allow this guy to walk into these universities, talk to these kids with somebody else not refuting his argument and showing what a complete fool he is. I actually think that Deion Sanders and Barry Sanders knows more about the economy than our wonderful Colonel Sanders.
Well, I think that's a good line. And Eric, I will say this. You took the words right out of my mouth. I believe that our universities are so rotten, and they are, when you have kids graduating 4-year degrees from a major university, and they've come out thinking that socialism is superior to capitalism. What in the world are we teaching these kids? I mean, socialism is a completely failed model. I mean, this isn't it's not like it's a close call, folks. I mean, socialism is socialism is Greece. Socialism is Detroit. Socialism is Puerto Rico.
Yeah, Cuba.
Why do we want to do that?
Yeah, we were just talking about using Chicago as an example, and you know, and of course, the Democrats run the show there. But yeah, there's no real basic economics being taught, evidently, in the universities anymore.
They're teaching it. It's just that they're teaching lousy economics. They're teaching these kids that socialism is a good thing. That's what these professors do. I mean, when I go on college campuses, I speak on 20 to 30 college campuses a year. I mean, I'm amazed at how these kids don't understand the most basic principles. They don't understand the law of supply and demand. They don't understand that, you know, that when you tax something, you get less of it. They don't understand that if you raise the minimum wage, you're going to destroy a lot of jobs for lower income people. Either they don't understand it or they don't care about it.
Yeah, Mike McBath here had a good suggestion for college students to sort of impress on them, you know, what it means when they get free stuff. They would all get a card, and the card would have on it their amount of debt for all of the things that they were going to get so-called free, right?
And it'd be like a credit card, Steve. In other words, you're already $50,000 in debt. Now when he says free education, now it shows $55,000, then a free car, $61,000. I mean, the object is somebody pays. These kids they're just so naive, and they take so advantage of these people. And the Democratic Party, what an irresponsible group of people.
These are kids that, you know, we're responsible for this. I mean, like, I have two kids who just have graduated from college, and you know, if you don't teach your kids the right things, they're going to come out with really very strange ideas. And the fact that we continue to fund these universities, that we, you know, we have Marxists and socialists on these college campuses that are pulling down $150,000 to $200,000 to teach this crap to kids. I mean, who's responsible for that? We are. We have to, as citizens, put an end to this. We publicly said stuff.
The battle is heating up. You're listening to The American Adversaries, If You Can Take It.
All right. Welcome back to the show, folks. Appreciate you being out there. 407-774-8255 is the number. Christopher Hart here along with Chairman of the Board, Mike McBath. On the line, we have Stephen Moore. He is the Senior Economic Contributor for FreedomWorks. And we're talking about, started talking about Barack Obama's budget, but it's morphed into more of a, you know, sort of socialism, liberalism type thing. And Stephen, one of the things that you mentioned that Obama would do in this budget would be, of course, increase the debt a whole lot more. And at $19 trillion and counting, that is going to be a huge problem for whoever the next president is it not?
Yeah, I mean, $19 trillion is a staggeringly high number, and we probably shouldn't even talk in the trillions of dollars because it's hard for anyone to even wrap their mind around that. Yeah,
well, as a matter of fact, real quick, you got I've got this about your article here where you talk about billion. To give perspective, a billion seconds ago, it was 1959.
Yeah.
A billion minutes ago, Jesus was alive. A billion hours ago, our ancestors were living in the Stone Age. A billion dollars ago was only 8 hours and 20 minutes. And that's probably even a little bit less than that by now.
So that's a great, great way to think about these things. And you know, we're racking up well over $1 billion a day in debt. At this pace, we're about $2 billion a day in debt. And look, I mean, this is not complicated. You know, every person who listens to the show knows if you have a credit card, you know, you don't just keep racking up debt on your credit card. I mean, at some point, you know, that crashes and burns. And that's what we're doing in Washington. But nobody really seems to care. Now, we do have low interest rates now. That's helped. One of the things that keeps me up at night is what happens if those interest rates start to rise.
Yeah, it'll escalate the debt phenomenally. I mean, we will have a huge problem if that takes place.
Yeah, because then you're going to have to pay more and more taxes. And by the way, hopefully these young kids eventually are going to stop getting free things and actually getting a job and start paying taxes. And when they do, they're going to pay a huge percentage of their taxes, not for roads, bridges, national defense, schools, things that they want, but to pay for all of the free stuff they got, you know, 20 years ago.
To service the debt, absolutely.
Yep.
Real quick about the present Republican field. Not many of them even mention the debt. I mean, Trump brings it up fairly regularly, but he, of course, doesn't, you know, have a specific plan of what he'll do about the debt. Do any of their tax plans, or have you seen anything where any of these guys seriously approaches the debt? Now, Trump did talk about the so-called penny plan. He said, why not make it a two-penny or a three-penny plan last night on Hannity? But have you seen any serious attempts to deal with the debt from these guys?
No, and I think the Republicans, you know, look, Democrats are big spenders, but the Republicans, unfortunately, are often big spenders, too. We passed this, you know, god-awful budget. I remember the omnibus budget that passed in December.
Yeah, right.
Funded all of the Obama initiatives. I don't have a lot of, you know, faith in neither party. You know, it's one of the reasons I actually find myself sometimes attracted to Trump, because I think that professional politicians have so ruined our country and so damaged our ability to lead in the future. We need a radical change. And, you know, I don't agree with a lot of things that Trump says, but, you know, the professional politicians have put us in this situation. Do we need another one?
Well, Steve, we are Trumplicans right here.
You're right.
There's Republicans, we're Trumplicans, you know,
yeah.
So that's the next party.
Well, it's that we think that we need a new perspective in Washington, D.C., and you don't get a new perspective from the same old flies, so to speak. And hopefully he would be true to his word and bring in fresh minds, if you will, from the business world and from military to address these real problems rather than to think that he has all the solutions with detailed plans or something like that.
Well, that's right. And, you know, I've been happy to try to help the Trump people. And I hope to be able to advise him a little bit on economics with my friend Art Laffer and others. And, you know, so I think whether you agree or disagree with what Donald Trump says, he's a man of accomplishment and a man of achievement. Right now we have a man in the White House who probably wouldn't know how to run a lemonade stand, let alone a $4 trillion economy.
Right.
And we're paying a price for that. And, you know, in a lot of ways, Trump is the anti-Obama. And that's a that's something that I find to be, and I think a lot of voters feel the same way. You know, if you look at the Trump voters, what did you call them again?
Trumplicans. Like Republicans, Trumplicans. That's
like that.
The name
like
of the future.
Yeah, feel free to use it. We don't have any copyright on it, okay?
Yeah, there's people with real jobs, you know, blue-collar workers who are working hard for a living, and they're seeing their paychecks taken away and for this racket we have in Washington. And, you know, it isn't fair. What's not fair is that all these people in Washington get rich off of this stuff. It's why we have to shrink the budget, not grow it.
You know, the funny thing was Jack Kemp was a big advocate of Lafler.
Yeah. And, by the way, Steve, chairman of the board here, Mike McBath, is chairman of the former NFL Players Union, and Jack Kemp, and he played on the Buffalo Bills together.
Actually, Jack helped me write my master's thesis. I took the year before O.J. got to Buffalo, the year he got there, and I tried to prove whether he was underpaid or overpaid. And Jack was a big part of that. But he'd have been a great leader in this time, I'll tell you.
Yeah. I love Jack Kemp. And, you know, I think people are really, really, you know, just fed up with the way Washington breaks its promises, both parties. And, you know, Trump, to some extent, is a breath of fresh air. And, again, I say that as someone who is not endorsing Donald Trump. I really haven't made up my mind among these four finalists. I think, you know, Malker has been a good senator and Cruz has been a crusader and, you know, Kasich's been a gutty governor of Ohio. But, you know, there's something refreshingly different about Trump, and that's why I'm willing to give him a second look. And I think if he wins big tonight, he might be an, you know, irresistible force at this point.
Steve, one question. You work for the Wall Street Journal, right?
Yes, for 10 years.
That's what I thought. Now, how come the Wall Street Journal, New York Times survey is always so inaccurate in the last 3-4 months? I mean, they are so far off the other surveys, it's not even close, and you wonder if it's done purposely.
Good question. The last Wall Street Journal poll was embarrassingly
terrible.
Wrong. It was terrible. They had Trump winning in South Carolina, and of course he lost by 10 points, so they were way off. And yeah, that's it. Look, you know, I agreed with Trump. I mean, look, if you've got the quarterback and he's not completing the passes, you bring in a new quarterback. If your pollster is polling and his results are completely way off, then you've got to get a new pollster. And I thought Trump was quite correct in calling out the Wall Street Journal on that. Now, look, I work for the editorial page. The editorial page are not the people who are doing the polling. So I just want, you know, because I hope people do read the editorial page every day of the Wall Street Journal. It's a really great paper. But, you know, the polling is an inexact art, and I think we pay way too much attention in politics to polls.
Well, you know, Steve, according to, what was it, not the New York Times, but your other paper up there, that I guess the people in South Carolina are such dunces that they can't read. That's according to one of your New York papers.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch. I mean, I think, you know, people keep saying, oh, my gosh, Trump can't win. And I got to tell you this. I mean, I think if Trump is the nominee and he's up against Hillary, he's going to be here by 20 points. You're going to kill him.
I agree. I think these people are so far off in their pronostication of where this election's going. I don't even think they're close. Trump will win in a landslide.
I think he would, too. I think, and you know, and I wish, I don't like the fact that he's so obnoxious sometimes, and I don't like that he's, you know, juvenile, and I, you know, that kind of stuff I don't like. But, you know, I like his patriotism. I like his can-do-ism. I like, you know, the fact that he calls out the political correctness. I like the fact that he would put, I think, a very good team around him, of really some of the top people. And that's very admirable. And we got to bring in some fresh blood. And, you know, when you got three of the four richest counties in America outside of Washington, D.C., you know, we don't produce anything here. All we do is take your money.
Well, we know that. You don't have to explain that one, Steve.
Yeah, maybe just keep sending it, you know.
We're not naive to that one.
That's a fact. That's a fact. Well, listen, we appreciate you being on the show with us today, and I hope we can check back in with you.
Next week I'll be out there at the Money Show in Orlando, so that'll be fun, and maybe I'll see you guys there. But
we'd love to have you come into the studio. I'll contact your publicist.
I'll be there on March 2nd and March 3rd, so maybe we can make something work.
Okay, we got a great Italian restaurant right up the street who's a great sponsor of ours, and we'd love to treat you to dinner.
I'll come on your show if you'll take me out to dinner.
We will make it.
That can be arranged.
We will definitely do that. All right, great. God bless you, and keep up the great work. I love watching you.
Thanks.
Thanks. See you guys soon.
Thanks. See you. Bye.
Let's make America great again.
Trumplicans. Remember that, Steve. Trumplicans.
Okay. Bye.
All right. Good night. Goodbye. All right. Once again, that's Steve Moore, the senior economic contributor to FreedomWorks. And once again, you can catch his work all over Fox, especially the Fox Business Channel. He's on there regularly with Neil Cavuto and all those guys. All right. So we'll go ahead and take a break. When we come back, we'll have more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. We'll go over our contest rules for Thursday again. And we got some other interesting news of the day that we'll touch on. So please stay with us.
Anything else? Listen to the American Adversaries on AM 660. The Answer. These guys got it going on. Trust me.
All right, welcome back to the show, folks. And Mike just pointed out something that had not dawned on me, but our contest is Thursday, and Thursday we're only going to have an hour-long show.
But they're going to have to give it pre-thought.
Yeah, you're going to have to
get your game plan and get it together, and get these, the prizes are big.
Contest entries prepared so that we can get as many in that hour as we can. And once again, the contest for this week is, what would you do with Gitmo? We want to help out poor old Barack Obama, right? We want to help him get this place done something
with.
Yeah,
let's clean this place up and at least get some achievement out of this place. This has been a disaster financially. It's been a disaster with the wonderful people we've held there who have all returned home except for, what, 91,
I was
going to
say,
right?
The only disaster is the fact that we've actually let these terrorists go only to, you know, have a number of them end up back in action against us.
Yeah, I just don't want to see them at the next Super Bowl.
It appears as though one of these people, the former Gitmo detainee, was arrested in Spain today plotting a terrorist attack. Imagine that.
Isn't that encouraging?
Oh,
now, don't you want to let the other 91 go as soon as you can?
Well,
we have plans for
him. We want to help Barack Obama out. Now, Mike has his own plans for closing Gitmo. He's going to actually have Trump open part of it into a club.
I'm going to divide it in half, and I'm going to take half of it and let Trump develop it into a wonderful resort in Cuba. It'll be probably the most successful resort they've ever had. They'll see capitalism at their finest. The other half, I'm going to knock out all the cells except two, and I'm going to take the 91 Muslim killers and whatever they are, and we're going to put them all in one cell, and their cell is going to be right next door to guess whose cell? Hillary's. And then what we're going to do is once a day, we're going to waterboard Hillary until she tells us exactly, you know, that she was selling influence while working as Secretary of the State and how much money they brought into the foundation. And then on their day from waterboarding that she is off, she'll have a chance to go into the cell with the 91 wonderful Muslims and discuss love and peace among liberals. So I think that's the way I would use Gitmo. Now, it's up to you, so please put your ideas together, because we want you to do a better job than our president has done with all these people in Gitmo.
Okay. We got a caller on the line right now who
wants
can't
to play
wait.
The game now.
So we'll go ahead and take it.
Take it. Go ahead. You know?
Yeah. So Diane.
She's registered.
Yeah. Diane, thanks for being out there.
Hey.
Howdy. Howdy.
In about 2 weeks, isn't that when Obama's going?
To Cuba. Actually, 3 weeks.
I see where she's going right now.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we get our people out of there right before he gets there. We go in and bomb the place.
Oh, jeez. I like that.
That's a quick answer. No wonder she wanted to enter it right now.
I was going
to
say, simple and sweet. All right.
That was just bomb. Wow.
Get our people out. I'm writing this down. People out. And then bomb the place.
That was as quick an answer as you could put together.
And then when Barack arrives down there, he could say, well, Raphael.
I think he's going to be there.
I got you. Have him go by to give a tour of the place and just happen to get caught up in the collateral damage, right? Oops.
Boy, it was rough,
huh? Okay.
Diane, you're sick.
All right, Diane.
That's not sick.
No.
That's expedient.
That's funny.
Okay.
Well, you must have enjoyed enjoyed watching him the day on TV, didn't you, Diane?
Oh,
his professionalism makes you sick, doesn't it?
I can't watch him. I don't. When he goes on, I go away.
I know. I actually turn the channels myself.
Especially when he comes out with, like today, where he's talking down to us.
Like we're all idiots.
He's preaching at us. He's trying to shame us and make us feel guilty and all this. Come on.
You feel bad about
it. And I have to tell you one thing. You know, I'm working online for Cruz, right?
Yeah.
And I have to tell you, the Cruz supporters are amazing. The Trumps, not so much. But whenever they post something about Obama, and I noted this and I said something about it, not one person ever comes on and supports this guy.
Oh, I believe that, don't you?
People are still posting stuff about what Obama's doing.
Oh, I see what you mean.
Not
and nobody comes to his defense.
Not one. Ever.
Yeah. Well,
not ever.
Now that I see what you're saying, I'm not surprised about that. Matter of fact, and this is one of the things that I was saying way back when we first started this show, is that Obama has, you know, he's disappointed a lot of people on his side of the aisle. So he doesn't have a whole lot of defenders out there.
He doesn't. He truly doesn't.
So yeah. Okay.
That's kind of good news, but it's kind of late in the game. But I'll take it.
Yeah. The way I look at it this way is the Lord works in mysterious ways, and God has a plan.
Oh yes, He does.
Yeah. Well, we don't know what it is because we're watching it as it's playing out. He knows. He knows how the end comes out. Okay. There you go. There you go. Amen.
You know
Amen.
What, Chris?
Amen.
Now that she opened the vault, right? Maybe we just open it up and it's a 1.5, tomorrow and the hour. So it's a 3-hour versus a 2-hour.
That sounds good.
Those who are late,
All right, Diane.
That was pretty snappy.
You have set the trend, Diane.
Wow.
All right. God bless you. Thank you.
Love you guys.
All right. See you soon. All right. Okay. We got Sherry on the line next and then John. Sherry, thank you for calling tonight. Did you want to get in on the contest?
I missed that part. What's the contest about?
We're trying to help Barack Obama figure out what to do with Gitmo.
My problem was about Gitmo.
Okay, go ahead.
Go ahead.
Oh, okay. Listen, I listened to that thing that he talked about today.
Yeah.
Listen, I was 11, 12, 13 years old, you know, when we had this standoff with Cuba and Russia and everything.
Right. Cuban Missile Crisis.
Yeah. And let me tell you something. He wants to get rid of Gitmo. And once he gets rid of Gitmo, this is going to allow the Iranians and the Russians to come in. And they're going to be able to fire these EMTs over our country.
Well, in fact, there are Iranians in Cuba.
Yeah, Hamas is already there.
Yeah, that's right. And that's part of what I think Obama's plan is to close Gitmo and make it a gift to Cuba, back to Cuba. And then, of course, it's a ready-made military installation there. I mean, it's ridiculous.
Well, if this happens, I hope that woman, that first woman we have in the White House.
You know what she says, woman.
I hope she can't get her hair straightened.
Yeah.
Okay? I can't, you know, and she can't, get all these things that she needs to get done because there's no electricity or anything. Oh, my God.
Yeah, I hear you.
Well, Sherry has great passion, doesn't she, Chris? I mean, man, I would hate to see Hillary approach Sherry, man. Oh.
Yeah, well, I think she's talking about Ms. Yell. But okay.
Oh, that one. Oh, that's another one.
Yeah. All right. Well, listen, Sherry, we appreciate it. Hopefully, now, Congress will stand firm on this. But even then, I got a queasy feeling with this guy.
I don't have a good feeling about that.
You know, it's going to be up to the Defense Department if Obama tries to do something, you know, underhanded, whether defense would go along with it.
Well, we got a solution for that from Diane.
Yeah, that's we get our guys out and bomb that place. All right, John is up next, and John, we appreciate you calling tonight.
Yeah, man. Hey, how are y'all tonight?
All right,
excellent,
Jim.
Excellent.
Well, listen, because he is who he is and what he futures aspires to be, I hear he wants to be the new president of the UN, so I think the UN ought to be there. That'll be the new home of the United Nations. There's cells waiting on all of
that's
them.
That's a good entry.
You want to make that a contest entry?
Yeah, I want that to be the contest entry. The new home of the United Nations.
Very original.
Yeah.
Into new home of UN. Okay, real quick, though, let me, and I've got this down. Real quick, it's my understanding, we did a little research, and it's my understanding that the five permanent members of the Security Council, none of their former leaders can be the Secretary General of the UN. But that doesn't mean he couldn't have a place to play in the UN. Personally, I don't think Barack Obama wants a job. He's never had a real job in his life. For instance, Michael Medved was kicking around the notion, by the way, it's conspiracy day on his show. Whenever there's a full moon, they do the conspiracy day. He was talking about Barack Obama appointing himself to the Supreme Court, and we kind of kicked it around a week or so ago on the Sunday night show. Oh, Hillary Clinton, if she got elected, she might appoint Barack Obama to the Supreme Court. Let me tell you, Barack Obama does not want to be on the Supreme Court for one reason.
How about Bill Clinton?
Well, Bill Clinton, yes, but he's too old. But see, it's two different people. Barack Obama doesn't like to work.
That would kill him.
And,
yeah, that would
become a community organizer.
Exactly, yeah. and president. And so he can avoid actually having to work. If you sit on the Supreme Court, you have to do a lot of work.
Yeah, he'd never.
Do you think? Well, no, I'm talking about him being president of the United Nations.
Yeah,
Obama.
Well, he, as I said, he couldn't be the Secretary General. He could play some role over there, though. It would have to be some figurehead type thing, though, because Obama, he's lazy. He doesn't like to work.
He could cover
Kenya.
Do you think
he's jealous of Bernie Sanders?
What's that?
Do you think that Obama's jealous of Bernie Sanders? Because I hear Bernie didn't have a job till he was 40.
Yeah, if Sanders gets elected president, he will be for sure. That's a fact. All right.
Oh, my gosh.
All right. But this, you know, like I say, every day is Christmas around here.
Oh, I know. I love the response. Well,
God
terrific.
Bless and thank you all tonight.
All right, thank you.
And
you're in.
Make a good UN building, though.
All right, there you go. You're in the contest, John. All right,
thanks,
God bless.
Fellas.
All right, appreciate you. Okay, so
we'll
just go ahead and take contest entries throughout tomorrow's show, too, and announce the winner on Thursday's show. The contest is, what would you do with Gitmo?
Diane was like right to it.
He was, too. I never would have thought of either one. So that's the idea, and that's what we'll do for Thursday's show.
It always amuses me, doesn't it, when the president always talks about all the people upset because we have it open and all the nations and, you know, all the Muslims around the world. Not one person I ever heard complain. I don't know.
Well, you know, if I were in Spain tonight, I might be a little upset, actually.
Yeah.
Right? So it's
we ought to tell them we're moving the 91 over there and see how excited they're going to be, right?
Exactly. All right, we got time for one more phone call, and we'll take another John. John, thank you for calling tonight. We appreciate you being out there.
Hey, you guys. Hey, blowing up Gitmo, that'd just be a waste of ordnance. Hey, listen, here's an idea.
Well, you know, that used to be a bombing range down there, actually, wasn't it?
Well, I'm thinking more like something a little more clever and a little more original. You get an old 707, kind of refurbish it, just enough to fly about 15, 20 miles.
Okay.
Okay. You get all the Gitmo prisoners on board.
Yeah.
The whole thing has been rigged to fly remote.
Right.
Like a drone.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Okay, you get them up. You fly out about 30 minutes, and we're going to serve a meal for you guys. after they have the meal, on the onboard screen, it says, you guys have just had a pork sandwich. and then you start running Debbie Does Dallas or Deep Throat or something on the big screen. And then you just drop it into the middle of the Atlantic.
There you go. I like that. I like that.
Very inexpensive.
Yeah. It reminds me of, you know, when the Sudanese tried to give us bin Laden.
Yeah.
And I always thought, why didn't Clinton just say, get the Sudanese on the phone. Okay, you're the president of Sudan. Okay, here's what you do. You have bin Laden tonight at 3 a.m. your time on the apron of your international airport. We'll have somebody there to pick him up. You have a CIA plane pick him up, fly him out over the Atlantic Ocean, and somehow lose him. right?
There you go.
That's right. That's right. John, we got the point.
Yeah. All right. So you're going to load the prisoners on an old 707, fly them by remote control, serve them a pork sandwich, then tell them served
them.
Well,
he's really rubbing it in.
Yeah, and show them a little porn and then ditch the thing in the ocean. I like it. All right. You're in the contest, too. We appreciate you, John.
Hey, thanks a lot.
All right, make sure you give Jeff your phone number in
case
you're
originality.
All right. We appreciate that. That's what we're looking for. That's what we're looking for. For Thursday night. And once again, we'll take entries throughout to the show tomorrow night as well.
Are most of these fellows, do we know if they're proven killers or they're plotters or they're a combination of both?
It's a combination. The worst of the worst are known plotters and terrorists and people who are known to have killed people. Yes.
Well, we're going to have great responses tomorrow. I can see that.
I can see that as well, too. All right. That's going to do it for tonight's show. We appreciate you being out there. You have been listening to the American Adversaries Drive Time Primetime Show. Don't forget, please download that free WORL-FM-AM app at your app store. Real easy to find, real easy to do, and then you are really hooked up with us here. We appreciate you ever so much. Don't forget, we'll see you tomorrow night with more of the American Adversaries Drive Time Prime Time Show. Night, everybody.